Shit, I don't have a good outfit or glasses on today.
Could dress up to get love, but guess what? I'm never gonna be that girl who's living in a Barbie world. Could wake up and make up.
It's Thursday, October 1st. This is episode 91 of the Token CEO podcast presented by the great Macy's department store. Macy's is celebrating, just like me, everything fall. I love fall. I love the leaves falling down and the sunshine outside and the air is a little crisp and you have to wear a sweater and I love to wear a sweater. They've got everything fall, so you can get sweaters, you can get workout stuff, you can get jeans. They're all about plaid. I just have a coat obsession. I just like coats. I'm trying to find a pea coat. I just like a military pea coat. And then I have one that I wear all the time. And then I was wearing it yesterday on a Zoom call and everyone was like, yeah, you wore that thing like 40 days last winter. Like, are you going to wear it all this winter? So I'm going to go to Macy's and find myself a new pea coat because it's October and Breast Cancer Awareness Month. If you round up your purchase, you can donate your change to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation to support its mission to prevent and cure breast cancer by advancing the most promising research. So visit Macy's.com, get yourself a pea coat, get yourself a navy blue wool sweater. I think those are like the most divine things on the planet. They've got great discounts. They've got a great selection. Macy's is a great brand. They're very supportive of Barstool Sports and we like to support them right back. All right. So before we get into the headlines, let's just talk quickly about Piper Lou. I think Piper Lou is an incredible website. If you want to give a personal gift to someone, it's like your thought bubbles make their way onto hats and t-shirts and mugs or wine glasses, which is my personal favorite. What they do is basically they have a whole assortment of high quality goods. They already have slogans that they think are funny and that they've put on them. Those may speak to you. I have a girlfriend who like is a slogan girlfriend. She's always like, into the slogans. I'm more into making my own slogan. I love an inside joke. I love things that have the F word on them. So if you go to piperlou.com, the great thing is you get a discount. So if you use code TOKEN, you can buy one and get one free. I like getting a discount. So whenever I'm buying gifts, my friend Martha had a birthday or we're doing something at Barstool or there's a group of people that I want to give something to. Maybe we should do this actually for the Run Club. I go to Piper Lou. You can customize whatever you want said on whatever you want it on. It's a great gift. It's a great product and it's fun. It'll make you laugh. It'll make your friends laugh. And it's a great way to do something that's personalized. So that's Piper Lou. This one killed me. So first headline, my biggest headline today, I was scrolling through Twitter the morning after the debate, which is just a bleak enterprise. And I stumble upon an article from The Guardian. And the article in The Guardian said that Pantone, for anybody who doesn't know, Pantone is they're like the arbiter of color. So Pantone describes, marks, categorizes, catalogs all different shades of color in the world. So when you go to paint your apartment wall or your house or your office, you often look for a Pantone shade and they have the ultimate catalog of shades of color. Okay, so quick background on what Pantone is. So Pantone today unveiled that they have a new shade of red. So this segment, this news headline is dedicated to my friend Kirk Minahan and his favorite song, Lady in Red.
Lady in red is dancing with me.
So they have a new shade of red, and it is inspired by one thing, which is the color of women's periods. Okay, so they have used their advanced color matching technology. I'd actually be curious how this whole thing came together. They've used their color matching technology to find the exact perfect original shade of red that matches a woman's period. Now, first of all, being a woman, I like not to get gross with everybody here, but there's no one shade of red with your period. Like, so first of all, that's just like a falsehood. There's probably like 15 shades of red from light to dark. It depends what day it is. I mean, all this shit, if you're a guy, you don't want to know about, like your hands are in your ear and you're like, la, 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 la. Anyways, so the reason they did this is they want to advocate for women, which is awesome. We love that here. But they also want to end the stigma of women's periods. Okay, also a great noble enterprise. So I don't even know where to start with this, which is like, is it not the most like 2020 thing ever that we're creating paint shades around bodily fluids used as marketing to end stigmatization? Like the next thing that'll roll out, like I'm just waiting for the white men of the world to be like, what about me? What about me? You know, like we're tired of being downtrodden after having it for so good for so long. And we want the semen shade of white or cream or whatever color that is. Like it equally as disgusting, kind of a preposterous way to create advocacy. I think it's bold. I think it's bizarre. I don't really, you know, personally for me, like I'm all about ending stigmatization. I think around the world you find that women, especially in developing or underdeveloped countries, you always read about the red tent in history, where if a girl or a woman has her period, she's banished and sent away for a period of time. Like that's wrong. That's not good. That's not women's empowerment. That's ignorance. Like, yes, let's get past that. Let's make sure that girls, when they have their periods, can get educated, can get opportunities, can do things the same as girls who don't have their periods, and even better yet, same as guys. That said, is this really the way to create advocacy? I guess it kind of is, because I'm sure I'm not the only person talking about the menstrual red shade of Pantone paint. But I also think it's kind of preposterous in, you know, let's say it's like me and Mina, my mother, are like going to go paint a wall. My mother would never paint a wall red. I would definitely paint a wall red. But anyways, I'm like, ooh, mom, I love this color. I'm going to choose menstrual red. Like not, it's just not functional for what Pantone does. Like, yes, the world should work to end stigmas. Like people should not be marginalized because of a natural body cycle. Like that's wrong. But I'm not sure that doling out a new color of paint that is going to go to like upper middle class people around the world to decorate their houses is the way to do it. So I don't know. I just don't know. All right. So JP Morgan, one of the biggest banks in the world, has been spoofing. So what's spoofing, you ask? So they have to pay JP Morgan. It's just come down from the courts that JP Morgan has to pay $920 million for what amounts to deceptive conduct. The 8-year period between 2008 and 2016, JP Morgan engaged in a very deceptive pattern of manipulations around precious metal futures and the US Treasury futures market. So essentially, what JP Morgan did is they had a bunch of traders sat on big trading desks at JP Morgan, rolled right up to Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon is like the Prince of Wall Street. He's like heralded as like this gold standard CEO. I will be curious to see how he responds to this. So anyways, you've got all these trading floors, you got a bunch of traders sitting around, and what they were essentially doing is entering and canceling large buy and sell orders so that it looked like there was a market around, in this case, precious metals, and therefore the global market around precious metals was affected. So this practice, unfortunately, has been used forever, but it is highly illegal. It's manipulating the market. They're essentially, it's fraud. They're pretending there's trades. That would be like the salespeople at Barstool Sports putting in an order from an advertiser and then canceling it immediately. But I would never know about it because, well, first of all, I would know about it because that's just stupid. But wait, how would I even say that? This would be like, oh, okay. So this would be like the merch team at Barstool Sports entering in and canceling a huge amount of orders for Davy Day Trader merch or for Nardini Run Club merch or for Pardon My Take merch, whatever it may be, and canceling them, but using the ghost trail, which would be in the case of JP Morgan, hundreds of thousands of orders to make it look like there was a crazy amount of demand in this case for precious metals. So complete fraud. You know, Dave talks about this all the time. Wall Street and the financial industry, like, purports that they are so powerful. They have made so much money. They are in, they have so much control over what happens both in retail with consumers, with small businesses, with big enterprises. JP Morgan again gets their hand caught in the cookie jar. So this isn't JP Morgan's first time at the rodeo. They got caught up in the Enron scandal. They got caught up in the Madoff scandal. So basically what this translates to for everybody at home is that JP Morgan, I think, has been around since the 1870s. Up until the last 6 years, they had 5 felonies. Okay. Not bad for a bank, I would say. Like, that's decent. All right, whatever. In the last 6 years, they've had 5 felonies. So even by Wall Street, shady Wall Street crook scenarios, this seems like particularly flagrant. They're averaging a felony like every 13 months, like, or, you know, 13 to 14 months. Like, that's bizarre. I wonder, so to our last conversation, the Pantone people should create a color for like crooks and fraud. I think it would be like shades of black, or it'd be like deep shades of green. Anyways, all right, so on to Facebook. So Facebook, our good friends at Facebook, are taking a big step in linking Instagram, Messenger, and WhatsApp. So now certain users are going to be able to message from one app to another. So if I'm in Instagram, I can put a message into my Messenger. If I'm in Messenger, I can leave a DM in somebody's Instagram. What essentially Facebook's talked about this for a while is that they want to connect the back ends of Messenger, Instagram, and WhatsApp. I think anyone who is concerned about antitrust, anyone who has thoughts about your personal data, should have like a high red alert right now. But essentially what they're doing is they're connecting all of the databases of every single platform that they own. They're connecting the interfaces of those platforms so that you can seamlessly message and connect one platform to another, and users on one platform can connect to users on a multitude of other platforms. As you guys know, like, this doesn't happen right now on your phone. You either text someone and you have a conversation that exists only within text. If you're DMing someone, you're only DMing someone. If you're DMing someone on Instagram, you're not. That DM obviously doesn't go through to Twitter because that's a different company, that's a different interface, that's a different backend, that's a different platform. What's going to happen now is in the Facebook portfolio of companies and in their portfolio of messaging and communication apps, you're going to be able to seamlessly weave those three things together. So I think there'll be some cool things about this, right, where you can see some of the best features of each platform will parlay into other platforms. You could be watching a video on Instagram and you can watch it together on WhatsApp, or you can watch it together on Instagram. You can also search for a user profile. You can see who people are on multiple platforms. When Mark Zuckerberg created Facebook, he wanted to, I think, quote unquote, connect the world. Like, the whole mission of Facebook was to connect people in public spaces. Most everything on Instagram and on Facebook has historically been public. When you think about the strides that Facebook has made into groups, they are very actively looking to connect people in smaller circles and in more concentrated areas, which naturally will have deeper engagement. But now what you're seeing them do, and you see Facebook's acquisitions leading to this, they're now making a big step into private communities, so private spaces, private communication. And I think that you're going to see this be a very, very massive trend for Facebook, whereby they will have public-facing platforms, they'll have public-facing groups, they will have open spaces where content is shared from consumers and brands and publishers and influencers. You're going to see a public, you're going to see a public arena. And then you're also going to see Facebook making a very strong and very deliberate drive to get you into a private space. And those private spaces for those private spaces for Facebook will be WhatsApp and Instagram, as well as Messenger. And I think what you're going to see is you'll see groups have private elements. You'll see private groups, like you have text groups with your friends. I think Facebook would love nothing more than your text chat to move over to WhatsApp. So very interesting to see what they're doing. It raises huge questions on the monopoly. It raises a lot of red flags around your data. You know, now it's very obvious that whatever data and behavior you are doing or sharing on WhatsApp is clearly being cross-referenced with what you're doing and saying and who you're friends with and what your network is on Messenger. And the same thing holds true for Instagram, and the same thing holds true for Facebook. So, you know, what's alarming is, you know, I would say people who listen to this probably realize, but in general, like, you are giving so much personal data about yourself to social platforms. Who you like, what you follow, who you're friends with, what you engage in, where you comment, when you're on the app, when you're off the app, what other apps you use, what you talk about. I don't know if anybody, I've talked about this before on the podcast, but, you know, when you think about the microphone on your phone, there are a lot of places where that data gets ingested. What you say makes its way into the apps you use, which then serve products to you based on what you've said and what apps you've used. So anyways, all of this is being put into, you know, obviously very big platforms that are very sophisticated, that are going to use these platforms to pull you not just into public spaces, right? The addiction around public spaces is very obvious, but now it's going to lure you into more private spaces. So that's what's going on with Facebook. All right. So today I'm talking to Rachel Hollis. Rachel Hollis may not need an introduction on this podcast. She's written 3 best-selling books. She's an author, I learned, of 10 books total. She's just written what I think will soon to be a bestseller called Didn't See That Coming. She's a motivational speaker. She's an entrepreneur. She lives in Texas. She's actually one of those people where, like, she came on the Zoom to do the interview and she looked just gorgeous. Like, her hair was done. She had great makeup. She was actually wearing a blazer. I can't tell you the last time I wore a blazer. Like, I used to rock a blazer like nobody's business. She's one of those people that where I was like, ooh, maybe I should wash my face and get dressed and, like, not wear a sports bra and, like, care what I look like on the Zoom. But I don't. So you can get Rachel talking about it instead.
Mr. Right could be nice for one night. Then he wanna take control, and I would rather fly so low. The Snow White, she did right, and her life.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
Thanks for doing this.
Of course. Oh my gosh, my pleasure.
I'm excited. Are you ready to jump in?
I'm good.
All right, Rachel Hollis, New York Times bestselling author. Tell us who Rachel Hollis is.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Let's just start with something light and easy. Who am I?
Yeah, who are you?
In what capacity are you asking?
When you really describe the core of who you are as a person.
I'm an entrepreneur. So it's as almost as long as I've been an adult, I've been a business owner, and it's a really big part of my identity and the way I see myself. I'm a mama. I have 4 kids. It's the most important role I play in my life. I am a communicator. I think that I have worked really hard over the last 15 years to understand how to communicate, most especially to women, either in written or in conversation or on a stage. That is how I would describe myself.
I love that. What do you think is unique about communicating with women?
Gosh, I think it depends on who's doing the communicating. I believe that my success has a lot to do with the way that I communicate, not just that I do. When I came up as a blogger, so I started as a blogger in 2008, which was kind of the golden age of being a blogger. And I, from the very beginning, sort of didn't understand the idea of I wasn't cool enough to put on airs. I wasn't cool enough to understand how to filter a photo or how to make it look better. And so I just sort of showed up as I would with my girlfriends, which was as the real me. as real me, and have continued to do that and continue to evolve in that way. And I think that there's something really powerful about meeting women where they're at and not where you want them to be. And I think so many things in media, and even some of my heroes, are really kind of asking you to come up to their level. And I try really hard to meet you at whatever place you find yourself in this moment.
Yeah, I like that about you. Like, girl, wash your... I like that you're very direct, but you're direct in a... in the way normal people speak. Like, even didn't see that coming. Like, didn't see that coming.
Right.
You know, like, you do meet people where they are, but I also think you do it in a way, and I strive towards this a lot too, is you do it in a way that is... I think sometimes women are afraid to say they either don't understand things or the way things are positioned is offensive, or you spend so much time trying to deconstruct what someone's actually telling you in the first place and you internalize your ability to figure it out, that I really find, and I think clearly this is a huge part of your success and you're massively successful, is just how direct you are.
Yeah. I mean, I think I just sort of approach it in the same way that I would with my friends or with the people in my life. And I hate sort of small talk. I hate, you know, I'm sure a million times in your career, you've gone back in the day when we used to be able to like go to a party or a networking event or something. And everyone just sort of doing that thing where you just are like, oh, how do
yeah,
I fill
I hate
the
that.
Time
I'm not good
until,
at that.
Right?
Yeah, I'm
it's,
not good at that.
It's the worst.
Yeah, it's the worst.
It's the absolute worst. And so, you know, it's so funny. I had a meeting with my agent last week. I was on a business trip. It was like a miracle to get to go on a business trip. And I was having a meeting with him and we got to meet in person, which was so exciting. I literally had a COVID test so that I could take a meeting because I just wanted so
yeah,
badly.
You're like, I want to get out and have a meeting. Totally.
Right. Totally. So we were sitting there and we just kind of talked about, I'm like, hey man, how's it going? And how does it feel? And what's this like? And to be an agent, to be someone who was so, you know, I think about this like with people who play sports professionally, like what does it feel like to go from having this goal and having this thing that you're working and being surrounded by other people who are giving you that energy as well, and suddenly it's been removed, right? Like, what does that feel like? So we have this whole dinner and we're kind of talking. He's like, man, I feel like I just went to therapy. And I'm like, yeah, this is what friends do. Like, this is, they have
you
real
actually talk to one another.
Yeah. Right. Like, I don't want the sort of BS of like, oh, everything's perfect. We're like killing it, whatever. No, the industry is a mess right now. How does that affect you? Like, what does that look like in your marriage as a father? Like, that's the real stuff that I want to know. Those are the conversations I want to have. So I just tend to bring that wherever I go.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so refreshing too, because I think to your point, in the blog era, so, you know, in the blog era, which is like mid-2000s, it was about honesty, right? It felt like it was more about honesty. It was more about who I am, where I am, what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, what I'm learning. Like there was... It was longer format. It wasn't social media, right? It was a written format, which I actually think plays a big role in it. But now you look at it too, it's face-tuned, it's edited, it's Photoshopped, and it's... I think that that's also hard because when you only see the perfect finished final product and that becomes what media is and that's what content becomes... I think it pushes your fears or insecurities or, you know, peccadillos further down. And I think it creates the need for more voices like yours.
Do you feel like, I'm just curious, I have like 10,000 questions about you and your job, and I'm so fascinated by all of it. And I'm curious, as you're saying that, it makes me wonder, certainly there are so many women who are into sports, and I follow you guys even, I'm not a sports person, but I just like the content. But do you feel like you have more freedom when your demographic is largely male? Like, do you feel like you have more freedom to not have to have things so polished, just sort of be like, this is funny because it's funny. This is interesting because it's interesting. This is athleticism, whatever, like that, whether it's, let me change it, not even gender. But if you're interested in sports, do you feel like that audience is more interested in the authenticity of the athleticism and what that world is, as opposed to things still needing to be like, I'm just curious if you feel like you have more freedom than someone who's in like a lifestyle, like it's got to be airbrushed and blown out hair and all of that.
I think that, you know, we're not so much about sports. I actually think, Rachel, what it is that I think if you're on your own, I think what's happening in the world is two things, or in content. One is you're part of something that's traditional and legacy. So in our world, that's ESPN or CNBC or Fox, and you're part of, you know, you're part of a big machine. I remember Dave Portnoy and I had a meeting at NBC Sports, and we got taken up to Stamford, Connecticut, and, you know, there was like a big conference rooms and big studios, and they had like soft drinks and sparkling water and like everything laid out, and they weren't sure of us, right? But all anyone ever talked about was the brand. You know, it was, is this NBC Sports appropriate, right? Like that was the veiled convert. We were having a conversation, but the real conversation was, are they NBC Sports approved? So that's on one end of the spectrum. You see that in sports leagues. You see that in traditional media companies. You see that in movies and Hollywood. Like, you see that in anything that is established and big. And then on the other hand, you see the internet has just democratized everything. So anyone can be an influencer. And the influencers are all like chopped up, thin, perfect, like bite-sized. You know, I follow a lot of them and it's like, oh my God, like you and your children are perfect again and again. And I think the thing that makes us so different and what I'm trying to do is we can be ourselves because we're neither, right? We're not trying to out-perfect the next girl or the next guy, and we're not trying to be NBC Sports, you know? And it's there's a freedom in being who you are. Like, that was a lot for me with this podcast, which is I don't have a business degree. I went to a liberal arts college, played sports, drank my face off, and had so much fun. You know, I worked hard, like I made the most of it, but I don't think you have to have a business degree or be from pedigree or have, you know, some highfalutin dad to go be successful in business. And I think partly what's so interesting about our story and this story is that anybody can be successful. And what I like about what you do is that you kind of break it down. You know, I think people don't like to talk about fears, but I also think you break it into practical, like, hey, wash your face, like do one thing. You know, and I think that's helpful to people.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that's the advice I want, right? I want someone to, literally tell me exactly. In fact, when I have people on my podcast before we start recording, every single time for 4 years, I have said, my intention is to offer listeners tactical advice. So whatever you're talking about, if you're sharing like, oh, this is, I'm like, be the stuff that you think is too, it's the minutiae and there's no way people are care. That's the exact thing they want to know. And I know that's real because I have been in my, in conversation with my community for over a decade. And the amount of times that someone will be like, but what protein powder, right? Like, I'm like, girl, there's 10 million things. Like, I am not the person that you should add. And they're like, no. But what protein powder? And
no, really.
Okay, this one. This is the one. And I don't know why I liked the label. Like, I'm probably not the person to ask. But if you want the little tiny detail, I will give it to you.
Yep.
Because I think that's what we want most. And in like, that way we can sort of compare, okay, this is how I do it. This is how you do it. Let me tweak a little bit and see if I get a better result from this try.
Yep, completely. I think that it's in some ways about like knowledge and control, right? Like, what is she doing? What does she have? And what control can I give to myself? Like, sometimes when my world feels a little out of control, we have, you know, this is a crazy company. It's 24/7. And sometimes things can seem big and out of my control. And, you know, my dad used to always tell me, like, the best control is no control, which I, like, I love and I need to hear. But I'm also like, sometimes a little bit of control is a great thing, and you can make things that you can control. Right. And, you know, even if it's like, hey, I'm going to make a checklist of things I'm doing today, or I'm going to do two good things for someone else, or I'm going to finally tackle that thing I've been avoiding, or, like, amazingly, I'm going to actually work out today, or whatever it is. Like, how do you think about that? Like, how do you help coach people through that?
It's funny. I have a little room in my garage, like half the garage got cut in half. That's my, where I work out. And there's a mirror on the wall, and I always will write out my workouts on the mirror in dry erase. And this weekend I wrote in a big note to myself that said, control the things you can control. So I don't ever trick myself into believing that I can control everything. But I also understand that there's a piece that comes if I do what I can do. And, you know, I'm launching a book this week. I have 4 kids. I run a company. There's all of these things happening. I run a company more specifically that the bulk of our revenue comes from live events, which is a bummer of a business to be in 2020, right? So the amount of stress, the amount of pivots, like all of those things this year, and I am a resilient person. That is how I identify in myself. But this year I'm like, damn, this is a year.
Bringing it.
And so I just have to keep reminding myself, like, okay, but what can you do today? And sometimes I can knock off a bunch of great things like you're talking about. And some days I'm like, well, I can do 10 push-ups. That's what I do. And now I'm going to see what that feels like to accomplish this thing. So for me, I don't ever try and control the chaos, but I try and find my center and my foundation in the midst of the chaos.
I also think the important thing that you hit on is that you're not going to be a 10 every day.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Like, some days I'm struggling to be a 4, you know what I mean?
Right.
And every day I'm a 4 on something, right? Because
yep.
any person is trying to take care of themselves or their family or their job or their finances or their friends or their health, whatever it may be. Like, you're not going to be a 10 all the time. I think what compounds this feeling of things being out of control is like the self-loathing that comes when you're not a 10 all the time. And I think that
right.
That's actually really important, which is to acknowledge, hey, you're not always going to be a 10. You're definitely not perfect and you're going to fuck it up. Like,
right.
That is a certainty. Now that we know that, what are you going to do about it?
Absolutely. And I think I am able to be a 10. I feel like some days I'm able to be a 12 because I allow myself those 4 days. Because I've really learned that on the days that I feel low energy, that I feel like my body is telling me, like, you need a rest day. You need to take a moment. You need to regroup. Last night, legitimately, I ate cookies for dinner.
Ooh, what
Not
kind of cookies?
Like garbage cookies, like prepackaged,
like
grandma
store-bought.
In the plastic,
yep.
Disgusting cookies. But I was like, I do my long runs on Sunday. So I did my 10 miles. I was like killing it. And then I got back and I was like, I just want to lay in my bed and watch Netflix. That is what my heart is telling me it needs right now. And by the time dinner rolled around, I was like, I don't have it. I don't want to make anything. I didn't go to the grocery store. The kids are with their dad. So I'm like by myself. I'm like, there's some cookies.
You can- and you probably were so happy.
I was so freaking happy. And I'm also graceful with myself. This is not something I had 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I would have, the self-loathing that would have come from like failing in that way. If people can't see me right now, I'm doing air quotes around the word failing. It would have just taken me out. And I'm like, girl, sometimes you need to eat some cookies. And then you're going to go to bed and then you wake up tomorrow and you have your green smoothie and you start again. But I really have come to understand that the grace that I have for myself in the moments that I'm not feeling it is what makes it possible for me to come back and stand back up the next day.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I actually think you're on to something, which is you probably have 3 days that are a 15 and 4 days that are 6.5. You know what I mean? Like, and the 15s are made possible by the 6.5s. And like, that's, you got to look at the totality of it all. Like, I think that that's what's hard. I think, especially, we have a lot of young women who work here, and it's hard to sometimes get to the totality of not feeling either very high in a moment of success or very low in a moment of failure, and not knowing how to get out of either one. Like, I learned how to play lacrosse in college, and I was a goalie, and lacrosse goalies in particular have a very low save percentage. So you're always getting scored upon. You're failing constantly. And it feels like shit to fail. Like, you're like, I let my team down. That sucked. Or you get hit and that hurt. But I had this coach that was always like, you gotta live to the next play. Like, everything, you gotta live to the next play. And I think that's part of resilience, is being able to like shake it off and move to the next play. And I think that's important for people in being happy and feeling success and feeling fulfilled.
Absolutely. You're speaking, you're reminding me, my 12-year-old plays any sport he can. Big into sports. We live here in Texas. You know, this is where children play sports. And he plays baseball. That's his favorite sport. And he is a pitcher. And just to paint a picture, he's not like, you know, there are those kids who join the leagues and you sort of travel and you're very high end. We're not that. We're just like the local playing baseball. But he's been working really hard on being a good pitcher. And he's, you know, coaching him and out there with dad and like doing all the things. And his very first game of the season, he was so excited. He's so excited. His dad's his coach and I'm in the stands and he's like, here we go. Like, I'm about to, you know, show these people. And he has improved so much. But he starts off and he's going really strong, and then he throws a bad pitch. And then he throws another bad pitch. And he throws another bad pitch. And it ended up being not a great first time up. And when he comes in, I can see he's kind of like his head's down. And he walks over to me. I said, hey, buddy, more important than throwing a great pitch is to learn to not get distracted when you throw a bad one. Because you in your life are going to throw way more of the things you wish you hadn't thrown than the ones that you're like, oh, that was perfect. And the bad pitch isn't what gets you. It's the mindset that you get into when you're like, oh no, and now I'm going to throw another one, and you freak yourself out and you can't come back from that. So if you can play each individual pitch, whatever, however this manifests for people who are listening, play that point, play that pitch, play just this one. It doesn't matter what came before. It doesn't matter what comes after. It's just this moment right now and how much you can stay focused on the goal that's in front of you.
I love that. I think you nailed it. Tell me about your book. So tell me about Didn't See That Coming.
Yeah. So we went into working from home as a company. I have 60 employees here in Austin. We went into working from home in March. And I had about a week where I freaked out, drank a lot of vodka, just to be totally honest.
Is that your go-to?
You. And what was that?
Is that your go-to?
Vodka is my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Really? How do you have it?
I love to, I mean, I don't, I'm not going to judge liquor. I like all liquor in many forms, but my most common would be vodka LaCroix. That's my favorite. So
any flavor LaCroix, hold on, let's just pause on this. Any flavor LaCroix?
That's important. I'll give you top three.
Okay, great.
peach pear.
Okay.
Simple Mousse. Key lime. Which not a lot of people like, but I do enjoy a key lime with some vodka, some ice.
Oh, I delightful. Love that. Have you had a High Noon?
Have I had a High Noon?
You should have a High Noon.
I don't know if I have.
High Noon is like a vodka LaCroix.
Okay.
I'll send you some. Anyway.
Okay, great.
Keep going.
Great.
So
I'll take it. So I had about a week where I freaked out, and then, you know, you got to get back. Life has to get back. You got to start working again and figuring it out. And as I started back in that process, I was editing the book that was meant to come out this year, which was supposed to come out in December. And it just felt wrong. And it just felt tone deaf. And it was like, it was so, you know, I tend to write with a lot of humor and the book was so funny. And I'm like, this does not feel like the right thing. It feels tone deaf to what people are going through. And it will still come out. It's called Girl, What the Health. So it was an entire book about body image and the way we perceive ourselves. And there was a lot of joking about my own body and all of the things with it. And so I started to think about, you know, if I could write something that was specifically for what we're going through as, you know, a global economy, a global community this year, what would I want to write? And I just started kind of putting something down to see if there was anything there. And this is what began to emerge. And I reached out to the publisher and I said, is there any way that we could crash a book? Crashing a book, if you're not familiar, is usually takes a couple years from start to finish. Crashing a book is like if you've ever seen a celebrity pass away and then like a month later there's a book and you're like, how did they do that? It's crashing. So they said, we think we can. And I stopped everything. I just wrote as fast as I could, stopped the other book, and got this down. I really wanted to talk about what it looked like to come through crisis. What does it look like to go through loss or pain or grief? And wrote the first draft. And then in my first round of edits, my marriage ended. And so I found myself in a really unique position I'd never been as a communicator, which was trying to communicate while inside of something really painful and trying to offer advice while I am hurting. And I did for a minute, to be honest with you, I did think, never mind, I'm just not going to put this work out. And then I thought, man, what a waste and what a loss. And so I just tried to find a way to write honestly about where I was and where I am. And then this is the book that emerged. So it naively, I thought, oh, I want this book. I want to write this book so that, you know, when quarantine is over and when COVID's over, people will have something to read to kind of, you know, process what they went through. And now, of course, here we are recording this in the end of September and it's nowhere near being over. So, but the intention behind it's still the same.
Do you think you will love this book the most because it was the hardest or the most personal?
This one, I don't know. Someone asked me earlier today, you know, what I sort of felt like. Did I feel really proud? Did I feel, and I really think this is something that I'll be able to absorb better in hindsight. It was really hard to write. It was really hard to write and it was really hard to narrate for the audiobook. And it's really hard to do press.
Yeah. Still about. Hard to talk about.
But I'm proud that it's out there. I really wrote it to try and give people hope, to offer some advice, to hopefully encourage anyone who is going through something hard. And I'll be really interested to see how I feel about this one a year from now.
Was it hard negotiating? Look, the end of a marriage is a negotiation in a lot of ways, as much as it is a separation and closure. Like, was it hard to be doing something that was going to be so public in the midst of something that is so personal and private?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm still in that world, yeah. Right? I'm still, you know, even just to be totally honest, like even trying to do press about the book coming out this week, but also trying to be respectful of this person I really care about. You know, he's the father of my children.
Yeah,
he will always be my family. Yeah. Like to be able to speak truthfully and authentically, but do it in a way that is respectful of him feels very stressful. That's just the God's honest truth. It feels like a lot, but I also, this is the life that I chose, right? This is, speaking the truth has been a part of me for as long as I have been communicating online, and to step away from that now would be disingenuous. So it's a lot to carry, but it feels important because I also know I'm not the only one who's navigating this right now. So many people, whether it's, you know, the loss of a relationship, the loss of a job, financial strain, maybe loss of family member this year, like at 2020, just everybody feels like they're going through something. So I feel like it's important, especially if you have some kind of public platform, to be honest about those times where you are struggling, right? To raise your hand and be like, hey, this sucks right now. So you're going to see me process when it sucks. And you're also going to see me at a certain point when life feels really good again.
Yeah, and you have like, perspective.
Yes. Right. Yeah. And I never want to show people only one side
yes,
of it. I also
I
want you to
that.
See the valley,
the
right?
Mess.
Not just
yeah.
the mountaintop.
Yeah, the mess. What would you give as advice to someone going through the same, a breakup? There's so much loss in 2020, right? Like it's the loss of culture and community. It is the loss of financial security in a lot of ways. It's the loss of, you know, if you think about COVID, I think that people tend to think they're invincible and that this country is invincible. And there's also been so much loss in that perception. Like what? And then also the personal things that people go through, someone being sick, getting divorced, all those kind of things. What advice, like if you had to pick one thing to give people, what would you say?
I feel like what I hear most from my community is that they're struggling with the unknown future, right? Like what's the future gonna, you know, all of a sudden, like everything's so uncertain, it's so unknown. And I find that so fascinating because the future has always been unknown. The future has always been uncertain. The only difference is that now you're aware of it. See, before all of this happened, we had a full sense of control over the outcome. And now you've been made aware that you don't have control over the outcome, but you still have control of the thing you've always had control of, which is yourself and your response to the world around you. And so when it feels overwhelming to look to the future, or what does life hold, or what is this going to, I love to remind people to come back to self. Get to know yourself better. What do you need right now in this season? What is something that would help you to feel better? What is something that would help lower your anxiety? Like whatever that looks like for you, come back to filling up your own cup. And I think when people hear this, women especially tend to kind of bristle at this idea because it feels selfish. You know, like the world's falling down and my kids are struggling with distance learning and all these things. And like, I got to take care of everybody else. I can't focus on me. And for me, I like to remind you that you cannot pour from an empty cup. Like if you deplete yourself to nothing, if you get to burnout, you can't take care of anybody. So if you use this time, this time of, for many of us, that forced us to slow down, that eliminated a lot of the noise, that really sort of showed us some clarity in our lives, use this as an opportunity to get to know yourself and to work on you, because that's something that can't be taken away. You working on you, no matter what's going on in the world around you, is something that you can always affect. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but you can control whether or not you're prepared for any outcome.
I am buying what you're selling, Rachel. I am into Rachel Hollis. I also think there's something to it. Remember Michelle Obama had this where she said it quite, I think Obama hadn't been in office that long, and she had made a very similar statement, right? Her statement was, you've got to feed yourself first, to women. And everyone had a freak out about it because it was selfish. But in fact, you are exactly right. It's not selfish at all. I also think, you know, I think for us, the single best thing I did or we did during quarantine was to get small. Like, and that's exactly what you're saying. Like, I remember I had a similar situation to you where I was not, I would say, overly woke to COVID before it like landed at my door. And on a Friday, I was like, we have to shut the office. We were in the middle of closing a big investment. We had just announced it. There was a lot of like big hyped up momentum around our company. And then it was like, and people were starting to become increasingly agitated, I would use the word. And then it was like, okay, we have to do something. We have to close the office. And for us, this place is a hive. It's there's so much energy and everything orbits around it within these four walls. And then you go home and it's so alienating. you know, for my time, we just have a company where you don't really work from home, and it is not it's just not part of our culture, and we had to make from home work, and it means making it work by yourself. It kind of brought me back to, I had had a lot of jobs where they were big global companies and everyone is alone, and it's alienating, I think. But to start getting really small, like I started a run club because I was like, you know what, I'm just going to try to run 2 miles a day. Like that's as far ahead of me as I can see. And I think for the people who are thriving in this time, like you are like, okay, I'm going to bang out a book, or mm-hmm. I'm going to go make this one thing happen today, or I'm going to figure out how to make a home office. And it's little things like that. Like I'm going to figure out how to take care of myself, my health. I'm going to figure out how to cook. I mean, there was like the cooking and the bread making and the pottery, like less into all that shit.
Lots of projects.
But I think that that's really great things because it's easy to lose sight of that. And I'm rambling, but I think that you're right is that you can't control what's out here or back there, but you can affect what's here. So,
I was just going to say a lot of the work that I do is talking about goals and setting big goals and imagining where you want to be 10 years from now, what that looks like. And what I've learned inside of 2020 is that when you're in crisis, one of the things that you can do is to pull those goals very close to you. Meaning, I would normally say to you, okay, what does it look like? What's your dream life 10 years from now? And now I will say, where do you want to be in 6 weeks? Like pull it much closer because that's something you can tangibly control and affect. But if you start to think about 10 years from now, then you start to really overwhelm yourself with it just feels too big. So pull it in a little bit tighter to where you are.
Rachel Hollis, thank you for doing this with us. You are awesome.
Oh my gosh. Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
I am going to come to Texas and have a vodka drink with you, I think.
Please do. That would be so much fun.
Tell people where they can find the book.
So you can get it at any retailer, just anywhere ever. There's a special edition at Target because we love Target. But yeah, you can get it anywhere. And the audiobook is narrated by me.
Awesome. Thank you for doing this. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rachel.
Okay, bye, Rachel.
Bye. I'm a pretty girl up in a pretty world, but no, I won't sit still, look pretty.
Sure, I'm a pretty girl up in a pretty world, but they say pretty. Just so you guys know, before I read this ad read, I go through all of the artists and then I decide who to talk about by virtue of whose name I can pronounce and whose name I cannot pronounce. So everybody knows art. Well, everybody doesn't know. I think that's why they're doing an ad read in this podcast. But art is one of the oldest and most valuable asset classes in the world. It has historically been very elitist, so that you can only own great art if you are mega rich. Masterworks is the first platform that lets anybody invest in art at the fraction of a normal price, and it really makes art investing accessible to everyday people. So what Masterworks does is it enables you to buy and sell shares of multi-million dollar paintings. Like, how great is that? So this weekend, I was actually obsessing. I texted my friend Constance because Coach has created, the Masterworks people are probably going to think this is very pedestrian, but whatever, I don't care. So Coach has created this collaboration with Jean-Michel Basquiat.
We are looking at how to pronounce Jean-Michel Basquiat. Jean-Michel Basquiat.
Jean-Michel Basquiat? Better or no? All right, whatever. Anyways, they have this collaboration that's sick. J-Lo's involved with it. If anybody from Coach is listening to this, I love the large famous bag. I think the large famous bag is the bomb. I was like, Constance, don't you know anybody at Coach who can get us the bag? I think Constance would want the tan bag. I would like the black bag. But anyways, it's kind of a non sequitur. So the cooler thing, I guess, like I'm pedestrian, so I would just want the Jean-Michel Basquiat handbag. But I could actually own a piece of his art. So anyways, you can own Banksy art. You can do Warhol. There's like a whole bunch more very, very renowned artists. And what you can do through Masterworks is you can invest in a piece of art. You can let that investment grow over time. And like investing, you can see if your investment yields value. So it's just another way and a different way and a diversified way to invest your money. So to sign up, go to masterworks.io and select podcast. Then use code TOKEN to skip the 70,000 person waiting list to get first dibs on your piece of art. So that's masterworks.io, select podcast, use code TOKEN to skip the 70,000 other art junkies in line. I've already done it. It's awesome. Maybe I will invest in a piece of art instead of having a handbag, but I think a handbag is also kind of art, but it doesn't actually accrue value, which one of these bad boys probably would if you invested in it. So that's Masterworks. Go check them out at masterworks.io. All right, so it's time for the one fucking good thing. So my one fucking good thing today is it's October. I love the month of October. October is probably my second favorite month of the year. But I also like October because it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I feel like that's like a really galvanizing cause to support women or families or people who are grappling with cancer and specifically breast cancer. I think we at Barstool missed... We just wouldn't have done breast cancer awareness in 2016. There were like 14 of us in the office and I was the only one with breasts or like real breasts, not like fat guy breast. But so that was 2016. 2017, I think we realized we should do something on like September 29th. 2018 and 2019, we got behind it. I think this is our best year yet. So we've designed a whole bunch of stuff. I worked with Casey and Fran and Rhea and Trista and all the women at Barstool Sports. We are getting behind a really special foundation called the Roots and Wings Foundation. In particular, the Roots and Wings Foundation helps women with metastatic breast cancer. One of the things that I'm learning about with breast cancer is obviously there's all different types of breast cancer. I think one of the best things that October does is it creates a celebration of survivorship. There's also a lot of women with a lot of rare cancers and a lot of rare breast cancer who are struggling. And these may be terminal illnesses, it may be terminal breast cancer, and those people need help too. And what's great about Roots and Wings is we're helping a very small charity. We're helping give donations to women of all backgrounds. And essentially what they do is they help provide free wellness therapies. That could be acupuncture, that could be therapy, it could be things that help mental health, because obviously it's a lot to grapple with. So I'm very excited about working with Roots and Wings. We'll have Di on our podcast. I can't wait for you to get to know her. And I think it's just a great thing to support women and to support a really great cause. And I'm really grateful to everyone at Barstool who's helped made that possible. We're launching merch today. Mine says, "You're the tits," which I just think is funny. And it's actually a pretty cool sweatshirt. Like, I would wear it in real life. I wouldn't wear it just as a gimmick for Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which I think is a good thing overall. So Casey, Fran, Rhea, Liz, Kate, Trista, like there's so many fabulous women at Barstool Sports. They're all getting behind the cause. They're going to do their own thing with it, but everything is going to a great cause, and it's going to a great cause that was created by a woman with breast cancer, which is just something that I think is a fucking good thing. One fucking good thing is brought to life by High Noon Hard Seltzer. High Noon keeps it real, just like we do. It's made with real vodka, real juice, and sparkling water. It is not a beer in disguise. So one of the things that people don't know about White Claw, when people on my hockey team drink White Claw, it just pisses me off. My friend Joe went for a 100-mile bike ride and then drank White Claw the other weekend. And I was like, those are two things I just cannot get behind at all. But I love High Noon because it's real vodka. I like vodka. It's real juice. Who doesn't like juice? And it's sparkling water. So it's actually technically hydrating and good for you. You can find it at your local liquor store. You can find it at the major grocery chains. Check it out. And that's our one fucking good thing. So that's it for today's episode. Huge thanks to Rachel. I thought her honesty and candor was pretty awesome. She was also very well-dressed for this interview, which you'll see in the social clips. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a rating, or give us a review. I'm at EKA Nardini. Token CEO is on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and TikTok. And we will see you back here on Monday. What you've been told, but this guy right here is gonna rule the world. Yeah, that is where I'm gonna be, because I wanna be. No, I don't wanna sit still, look.
podcast should be called State of the Union. Portnoy's podcast.
He's
the press.
Yeah.
Weekly State
or
of the Union.
State of the Pirate Ship or something.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever it is. You know, if it's a weekly presidential address on what's going on at Barstool, which is a great idea.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think it's good for, like, the health of the company. His podcast is what, or the Eddie Portnoy podcast is initially what I thought Erica's was going to be.
Yeah, and she's kind of gone the business thing, which is good. People seem to like it. Yeah. You know, she's carved out a niche, which is good. It's a niche. It's different. That's a good idea. But I think Erica should do, like, you know, I put it this way. She won't want it. Like, I'd be happy to volunteer and play the Eddie role with Erica once every 2 or 3 weeks and just ask Barstool questions.
Yeah.
I'm offering my services.
Okay.
She'll turn it down, but, you know, what can you do? Who can blame her?
Oh, jeez.
Hmm. That's interesting. I love Kirk. I think Kirk's a good interviewer. Maybe I'll talk to him about it.